I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. If you're thinking about it, chances are we're talking about it on WHYY's Radio Times.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice.
Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez said goodbye to his colleagues at the Justice Department after 2.5 controversial years on the job. He leaves behind a department that's been tarred by scandal, hurt by the resignations of senior staffers, and dealing with low morale among those who remain. This week, President Bush selected a retired federal judge to replace Gonzalez. Michael Mukasey would be Bush's third attorney general if approved by Congress, which seems likely. He will have a little more than a year to fix problems at the Justice Department, most notably to restore its tarnished reputation. We've invited two former staffers or members of the Justice Department to join us today on Radio Times, both of them joining us by telephone. Dan Marcus is a professor at American University's Washington College of Law. He was the general counsel of the 9/11 Commission, and he was associate attorney general in the last 2 years of the Clinton administration. Dan Marcus, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
And Dan Metcalf is a faculty fellow in law and government, also at American University's Washington College of Law. He was at the Justice Department for 30 years and was the founding director of the department's Office of Information and Privacy for 25 of those years. And he's got a forthcoming book called Inside Justice, Secrecy at Work. And Dan Metcalf, nice to have you with us as well. Good morning.
Good morning, Marty. Pleased to be with you.
Nice to have you both with us. Let me begin with you, if I could, Dan Marcus. How do you think Alberto Gonzalez will be remembered?
Well, I think he'll be remembered as an attorney general who ended up a little over his head. Alberto Gonzalez, was a close political confidant of the president's. He had worked for him when he was governor of Texas. He had then been appointed to the Texas Supreme Court. But he came to Washington as a relatively young man, inexperienced in federal law and federal matters, and was immediately, particularly after September 11th, thrown into a host of difficult and important legal issues, first as counsel to President Bush, and then as Attorney General. I think that the basic problem that Alberto Gonzalez had was that when he became Attorney General, he didn't separate himself sufficiently from his longtime colleague and friend who was President of the United States. And I think that he also did not, partly because of his lack of experience, was not able to immerse himself quickly enough in the complicated workings of the Justice Department.
And let me get Dan Metcalf to respond to that same question. How do you think Gonzalez will be remembered?
Well, it's interesting that you use the word respond, Marty, because at the risk of sparring too early in this program, I'm going to take a slightly different perspective.
Please do.
My colleague, I believe that Attorney General Gonzalez was way over his head, and that was painfully obvious, most significantly or most pointedly, in his appearances on Capitol Hill, beginning with April and then a Judiciary Committee, and there was another one later on outside, but also disastrously or most disastrously in July before the Senate Judiciary Committee again. I think that one could make a strong case that he arguably is the most embarrassed and embarrassing cabinet officer in recent memory, and that being so severe, that public face of the department, so to speak, being so far below par, a measure or a reflection of just how much work there has to be done by the new Attorney General in order to fix the problems, as you said earlier.
Well, and I do want to get to that, but you both have used the phrase over his head, and it sounds like you're saying, Dan Metcalf, that he wasn't qualified for the job.
I think it's clear that he was not qualified to speak as a representative of the department on Capitol Hill under anything other than light questioning. Once the Senate and also the House turned over, so to speak, in the midterm election, and the questioning was more pointed under Democratic control, he folded so badly and, frankly, had such repeated lapses of memory that it was hard to imagine that this was a man who was qualified to be sitting in that chair to watch him. And I should probably point out as well, it wasn't simply as if the Democrats were suddenly trying to skewer him for partisan purposes. One need only look at the questioning from the Republican members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, for example, to see how he just could not stand up to their questions about what was going on in his department.
Well, and I'm thinking the questions that came from Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Specter.
Yes. Well, in fairness, though, not to sound too political in my comments, Senator Specter is closer to the Democratic side by orientation than the average Republican is. But you can find other Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee, such as Senator Colburn, for example, from Oklahoma, who flat out called for his resignation right on the spot. Now, that's a senator who is way, way over at one end of the political spectrum, yet he was so appalled at what he saw in front of him that he just couldn't help himself from saying, this man should not be holding this job.
And Dan Marcus, sounds like you want to add something.
Well, I was just going to say, I think there are two basic issues here that we've touched on. One is competence, and the other is independence. Understanding his role as Attorney General, which is a very different role than being counsel to the president. The Attorney General is the chief law enforcement officer of the United States, and while he's a member of the president's cabinet, he needs to maintain a certain distance from the president, the White House, and the politics of the executive branch because it's so important for the American people to have confidence that the Justice Department is making its decisions about how to enforce the laws on a nonpartisan, independent basis.
Well, and let me follow up with that to you, Dan Marcus, and as you talk about the relationship with the White House, it's clear that he had a broad view of executive power, and I'm thinking of his various statements and rulings having to do with the Geneva Conventions, having to do with torture, warrantless surveillance. Do you see that as part of his legacy as well, giving the White House much broader powers than it had before Bush came into office?
Absolutely. And of course, Judge Gonzales was not the only lawyer in the administration who had those broad views. And indeed, I think he was not the intellectual father of those views, if you will. I think they emerged mainly from Vice President Cheney and his lawyer, David Addington, and from the young lawyers in the Office of Legal Counsel at the Justice Department, such as John Yoo. But Judge Gonzales, as counsel to the president and then as attorney general, enthusiastically embraced and promoted those views, and that led to a number of legal crises and legal setbacks for the administration, not to mention problems for the United States internationally.
You want to speak to that, Dan Metcalf?
I do, and I must say I agree with that completely. At risk of sounding too agreeable, I think that's exactly on the button as an assessment, and I would add, I guess, just two things. One, that Attorney General Gonzales was pretty clearly proven to be a bit of an empty vessel, so to speak, a conduit for the strong views on separation of powers and torture and the like that did emanate clearly from the Vice President's office. And the second thing is that it's very important to remember that he came into the position of Attorney General as the former White House counsel. He basically didn't really change his hat, so to speak. And if anything, this should stand as a long-term lesson, a historical lesson, warning future presidents and even Senates when it comes to confirming a nominee against having someone move to the position of Attorney General directly from the White House in that way. That would be a tricky move at best, and with Gonzales, it was a disastrous move at worst.
But is there also a lesson? Don't have your good friends be Attorney General if you're President of the United States?
No, I'm going to disagree with that. I think that would be too facile a lesson to draw here, with all apologies, because I don't think it's impossible or necessarily impractical to have that. I think of William French Smith, for example, who was a longtime lawyer to President Reagan. He acted with sufficient independence, and frankly, even other attorneys general, Robert Kennedy comes to mind, and John Mitchell, they had other problems, but it was not so much that they were long-term friends of the department. I would hate to see a rule that would, or a principle or a historical lesson that would rule out a president coming in and being able to rely upon a good friend as Attorney General. It's just key, however, that that Attorney General operate with the type of independence that Dan Marcus was describing.
I'm going to disagree a little with my colleague on that. I think the lessons of history, including John Mitchell, including William French Smith, who was who I think observed professional standards as Attorney General, but was not an outstanding Attorney General, and the Gonzales case, show the perils of, it's not, I wouldn't argue for an absolute rule against the president having a friend or someone he knows well. Obviously, the president has to have confidence in the attorney general. But to appoint someone who has been a close legal advisor to you in the past, whether as a personal lawyer, whether, as in the case of Judge Gonzales, your counsel when you were governor of Texas, to appoint that person as Attorney General of the United States, I think carries the risk, as we've seen in the Gonzales case, that that person will have a confusion in his of his role because of his personal loyalty and personal friendship with the president. I think Bobby Kennedy was a wonderful Attorney General in many ways, but I think it was a bad idea for John F. Kennedy to appoint his brother Attorney General.
And we're about a minute away from our first break here. I'm back to you, Dan Marcus. Should Congress, though, continue its investigations into the Justice Department and most notably its investigation into why those U.S. attorneys were fired? Because I still don't think we have the answer to that question.
No, we still don't have the answer, and I think the investigation should be continued because the firing of the U.S. attorneys raised questions as to political interference from the White House. When I say questions, I don't think the questions have been answered. I don't think it's been established that there was improper political interference. But there are serious questions there that deserve to be explored because this goes to the heart of what we talked about earlier, and that is public confidence in the integrity of the decisions of the Justice Department. I think the Justice Department has a well-deserved good reputation among the American people for professionalism and integrity, and it's very important that that reputation be preserved.
And Gonzales asked to appear again before the committee or committees?
Sure, if there are questions that he hasn't answered. I think one of the interesting things we'll see is whether the confirmation process for Judge McKaysey will lead to a deal between the White House and the Senate Judiciary Committee and the House Judiciary Committee that will result in the release of some of the documents and the testimony of some of the witnesses that those committees have been seeking with respect to the U.S. attorney controversy. And I'm thinking of Karl Rove and Harriet Myers.
And I want to take that very short break, and I'm sure, Dan Metcalf, you have some thoughts about that as well, and we'll pick up on those thoughts after this short break. That's Dan Marcus also joining us, Dan Metcalf, and we invited them to join us today on Radio Times to talk about the Justice Department and to talk about how to rebuild the Justice Department after Alberto Gonzales, who left last week, moves on. Stay with us.
This Sunday at 8 p.m., WHYY TV 12 presents The War, an exciting new documentary series from Ken Burns that explores the Second World War from an American perspective. Sponsored locally by Haverford Trust and the University of Pennsylvania College of General Studies.
Next time on Day to Day, he was in the center of Iraq. Now he's back in the heart of America.
It is a very odd thing knowing that there's a large number of young men and women who are fighting while we're all here having this very nice conversation in the park.
From Kansas City, Missouri, writer Whitney Terrell's View from the Middle.
It's shocking and almost hallucinatory in some ways.
Next time on Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young from Public Radio's daytime news magazine, Here and Now. We bring you the news that happens between the morning headlines and the afternoon wrap-up, plus conversations with authors and music makers, stories that affect you, maybe a story about you. So please join us for Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture, Here and Now. today at noon on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY Mainline School Night with over 500 day, evening, and Saturday courses from City Line to Paoli. Details at 610-687-0460 or online at mainlineschoolnight.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. This week, President Bush chose retired New York City federal judge Michael Mukasey to replace Alberto Gonzalez to head the Justice Department. Gonzalez resigned after a tumultuous and controversial tenure, leaving behind a demoralized department, its reputation tarnished. And we're talking with Dan Marcus and Dan Metcalf about the department and what can be done to restore its reputation and deal with the morale problems that reportedly are plaguing the department as well. Dan Marcus is a professor at American University's Washington College of Law. He was general counsel of the 9/11 Commission and associate attorney general in the last 2 years of the Clinton administration. Dan Metcalf is a faculty fellow in law and government, also at American University's Washington College of Law. He was at the Justice Department for 30 years and a founding director, the founding director of the department's Office of Information and Privacy. And he's got a forthcoming book called Inside Justice, Secrecy at Work. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Dan Metcalf, let me just get your response to what we were talking about before the break. And this is, of course, looking ahead to restoring some of the integrity and whether Congress should continue its investigations. And what would you be looking for?
Well, I just want to make two quick points at the outset, one of which is that it's important for the current U.S. attorneys, as well as future U.S. attorneys, to have that issue taken to ground, so to speak. In other words, to get to the bottom of that, because for them to have a concern that this could repeat itself in any way is counterproductive to their being able to do their best work. And the second point I wanted to make is to emphasize that in addition to anything that Congress might do prospectively, there are two current ongoing investigations or series of investigations that are internal within the department. The Inspector General's Office and the Office of Professional Responsibility are looking at a range of things that afflicted Attorney General Gonzalez's tenure, and there is even some informed speculation within Washington that perhaps the progress of at least one of those investigations might have had something to do with Attorney General Gonzalez's sudden decision to discontinue digging in his heels, so to speak, and to leave or announce his departure just before Labor Day.
So you're saying there might be some information there that would be helpful to understanding what's been going on there?
It's not unreasonable to surmise that there is more being uncovered there, further detail on what they're looking into, and that that might well have a connection to the sudden decision by the Attorney General and or the President to discontinue the process of the digging in of the heels.
Let me turn back to you, Dan Marcus. What do you think of President Bush's choice of Judge Michael Mukasey to replace Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez?
Well, I think it was a very wise choice because it's responsive to some of the things we've been talking about, the problems that have existed in the Justice Department. Now President Bush is reaching out to someone who is not a close political associate of his, someone who's been a distinguished federal judge for almost 20 years. He retired as a federal judge just a year ago, I believe, and someone who has a reputation for both competence, he's a brilliant guy, and integrity. He's a very conservative judge with respect to his views on a number of issues, including executive authority and including the need to take strong steps in the war on terrorism, and that's been reflected in a number of his decisions. But I think what he'll bring, which is so essential to the Justice Department, is a well-established reputation for professional skills and for personal integrity.
And I, to you, Dan Metcalf, some of the things that you have said and others have said about the Justice Department in the days of Watergate, and you were there at the time, that the department needs someone like an Edward Levy, the Attorney General, who was there, who was also having to deal with an embattled department.
Yes, I would make the point that what's essential now is to have an Attorney General, or have Attorney General designate McKayse, act much more like former Attorney General Levy did in 1975 and 1976, then Attorney General Saxby in 1974. I just happened to be there as a very young law student, law clerk in the Attorney General's office in 73 at the time of what's called the Saturday Night Massacre, the resignation of Attorney General Richardson and the Deputy Attorney General Ruckelshaus. And I was there when Senator Saxby came in early 1974, and he did not do much to heal the department during that following year. It was only when President Nixon gave way to President Ford, and President Ford appointed Ed Levy as Attorney General at the beginning of 1975, that the tremendous improvement and the creation of distance and independence between the department and the White House came to be. So I bring that historical perspective. I think it's very important that Attorney General Designate McKayse, once he's confirmed and sworn in, start acting much more like Levy than Saxby, because he has basically six major constituencies to serve. First, he has to worry about Congress, not just the Senate Judiciary Committee, before whom he will appear for confirmation, but also the House Judiciary Committee. He has to worry about the American public and restoring the reputation of the department and the image there. He has to worry about the world public, where there's more than ample reasonable question about the Department of Justice's commitment to the rule of law. He has to worry about state and local law enforcement, where there has been quite concern about the competence of the department, as Professor Marcus mentioned. He has to worry about U.S. attorneys, and we've spoken about that. But last, and very much from my perspective not least, he has to worry about the Department of Justice's employees. The morale, I think it's fair to say, is just as low, if not lower, now than it was when I was there during Watergate times almost 35 years ago.
And what does that mean when you say morale is that low? People don't want to be there? They're looking for work elsewhere? They don't respect their supervisors? They don't respect the department itself?
Let me take that last point first to make an overarching assessment. You know, nowadays, when you work for an institution or in the federal government, an agency or department, you see the public face of your agency very largely in congressional hearings. And in the era of C-SPAN, you can turn on your TV in the middle of the night and suddenly see your cabinet official or your agency head sitting before members of Congress, handling him or herself in a certain way. And that's presenting the picture of the agency to the world and to you. Well, DOJ employees saw that horrendously this year, and it was embarrassing for all employees to be working for an agency that was headed by someone who comported himself in the way that Gonzalez did, his inability to remember, his evasive responses to questions. So that has an enormous impact on morale. There are people who have left the department, people like myself who retired earlier than they otherwise would have, simply because they couldn't go home and look their wives and kids in the eye and say, I work for Alberto Gonzalez. That's a terrible, terrible problem. Now, there's no question that the department is such a resilient agency, that the employees are very dedicated. They will work very hard regardless of who their leader is. But let's face it, human nature being what it is, it has a tremendous effect on employees' attitudes and employees' morale to see someone like that. And that has to be turned around.
But and I wonder to you, Dan Marcus, because if, and again, it looks like he will be confirmed, Michael McKayse, he's on the job a little less than a year. Can he accomplish all the things that you think need to be accomplished to turn the department around?
Well, I think obviously he can't work lots of miracles within just a year, but I think I'm a little less apocalyptic in my view of the morale at the Justice Department than Dan Metcalf is. I think it's been hurt. I don't think there have been wholesale departures because of morale problems, and I think morale can improve very quickly. I think Gonzalez's resignation, I think the prospect of a new attorney general who has an outstanding professional reputation, will do a lot to restore morale very quickly. You got to remember that 99.9% of the department's employees are career employees, and that includes not only the line attorneys, but also most of the supervisory people. And so I agree with Dan Metcalf that it's embarrassing and depressing to see the top guy in the department in difficulty and being criticized in the press and on the Hill in the way that Judge Gonzalez has. But I think that can be fixed fairly quickly.
But I did read about, and I mean, obviously I don't have the names here, but resignations of senior staffers at the Justice Department, and this is back to you, Dan Marcus, as an indication of some of the serious problems inside the department.
Oh, you mean the resignations of some of the Deputy Attorney General
and
other senior people. That is actually that you put your finger on something that Judge McKasey is going to have to devote his attention to quite quickly, and that is that there are a large number of vacancies in senior political positions, Assistant Attorneys General, the Deputy Attorney General, the Associate Attorney General, that need to be filled quite quickly. Some of this is attributable, though, not to morale problems, but just to the normal process late in an 8-year administration of people leaving for reasons unrelated to morale problems. But I do think that that is one of the real challenges that Judge McKasey faces, finding well-qualified people who are prepared to go through the confirmation process for a job that may only last a year.
And I do want to get to our callers, but Dan Metcalf, you mentioned earlier that you couldn't look your family in the face, and I know that there's a reason why you left the Justice Department. And can you give us, the shorthand version of why you left?
Well, the shorthand version is that I couldn't look my wife and kids in the eye and say I worked for both George Bush and Alberto Gonzalez, and this was in March of 06 when I decided to retire. I wasn't the right age yet. I didn't turn 55 until the end of last year. And my wife and kids understood the Bush part. They didn't understand the Gonzalez part.
Mm.
Now they will understand that it has to do with the quality of the leader of the office, not just competence, but integrity, and the ability to lead the department in the traditional way, at least the way it's been for the last 30 years. I have to tell you, with respect to vacancies, I'm sitting here now looking at an organizational chart of the department as it existed when I retired in January of this year, and the department has 40 components, and there are 40 pictures here. And I'm looking very quickly and seeing that, including myself, there are more than a dozen photographs of people who are no longer there.
Hmm.
I have to disagree with Dan Marcus and say there's nothing normal about this at all, to have this sort of turnover, both career people and political employees, and it is very demoralizing to see that sort of thing.
And that's Daniel Metcalf, also with us. Daniel Marcus, joining us today on Radio Times to talk about the Justice Department, a place where they both used to work, and what can be done to restore its reputation and integrity. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We'd love to hear your reaction to our conversation, and obviously your reaction to what has been happening in the Justice Department over the last couple of years. We've got Rosemary from Princeton joining us. Hi, Rosemary. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, Marty.
Good morning.
Thank you. Wonderful program.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask whether your guests thought there was any appropriateness in possibly asking Congress, or not asking Congress, but if Congress decided to say that they would not confirm anyone new until the subpoenas have been answered. And I've heard a theory advanced by Dr. Cohn at the Jefferson Law School that there should be some discussion about, I guess it's McKasey's connection to AIPAC. He and Senator Lieberman, I guess, are very allied on positions relative to that organization. And I wondered how they thought that might affect his role in the Justice Department, if at all.
Well, and Rosemary, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Let's take the first part first. I'll put this to you, Dan Marcus. Should Congress then essentially hold this nominee, I guess, in abeyance until they get a response to these subpoenas?
Well, I think it's really a question of political power. I think in principle, the issues are quite separate. And in a way, it's unfair to Judge McKaysee when the president is asserting executive privilege to hold his nomination hostage. And it's important, I think, that we get a new attorney general in there quickly. Having said that, the way of the world is that this is a nice opportunity to try to work out this problem. And I know that my hunch is that Senator Schumer, who I think has been the point man for the Senate Judiciary Committee, and Fred Fielding, the very able White House counsel who was one of my 10 bosses on the 9/11 Commission, are probably trying to work this thing out. Can I comment briefly, Marty, on
yes.
the second question about
yes,
AIPAC?
Yes, absolutely. And then we'll get Dan Metcalf. Yes,
yeah,
go ahead,
I don't
Dan
think
Marcus.
It's disqualifying at all. As you know, the caller didn't mention, the Justice Department has a major case, criminal case now, a controversial one, pending against two AIPAC officials. And obviously, if Judge McKaysee has a close connection to AIPAC, and I don't know whether he does, but if he does, presumably he would recuse himself from that matter. So I don't think that's a matter of concern at all. He's not being nominated to be Secretary of State.
What do you think, Dan Metcalf?
Well, I guess I should preface my reply by saying that I do look at this very heavily through the lens of what's most important to the department and to restore its position and repair the damage in that's been wrecked upon it in so many ways. I have no reason to think that Attorney General Designate McKaysee would not be a good, viable Attorney General, and therefore I think the sooner he is in, the sooner he is confirmed, the better for the department. And that would argue against the Senate not using this opportunity to delay that. I think any further delay, there's been so much thus far, any further delay is very harmful. There should have been a new Attorney General in, I believe, last April or May, and it's very unfortunate that it took this long. That having been said, though,
yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to give a counterpoint, I guess, is to say the department is being led right now by a very able and highly well-respected acting Attorney General, and that's Peter Keisler, former head of the Civil Division, who was also acting Associate Attorney General, the position that Dan Marcus held in the Clinton administration for a while. And I do believe that if it turned out, for whatever reason, that Peter Keisler had to lead the department for the coming weeks or even months, the department would be well served with a good model and a well-respected leader to at least begin the process of repair. And in that, I'll just note very briefly something that Dan Marcus showed me yesterday. There was an article in the New York Times, that maybe it was even an op-ed.
No, it was an
editorial. Thanks for correcting.
Okay.
That seemed to speak disparagingly of Peter, and I think that is just so off base. I mean, I make this comment as a career employee. I'm not affiliated with the ideology that Peter represents. He's very conservative. I am not, at least as a general matter. I'm a registered independent, but he and I are not on the same wavelength ideologically, but I have tremendous respect for the man, and I think if it comes to it, he could well lead the department on an acting basis, and that what the New York Times said yesterday was way off the mark.
Well, we're going to take another short break and get back to our conversation. That's Dan Metcalf, also with us, Dan Marcus, talking about the Justice Department. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The University of Pennsylvania Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology supports WHYY. Penn Museum presents River of Gold, pre-Columbian treasures from Sitio Conte, and an opening celebration with Panamanian music and dance this Sunday, September 23rd. Ancient gold artifacts, expedition photographs, and drawings tell the story of Penn Museum's 1940 excavations in Panama. Details at museum.upenn.edu or 215-898-4000.
What happens in Pakistan's upcoming presidential election will not only affect that country, it will affect America's war on terrorism. On the next Fresh Air, Pakistani journalist Ahmed Rashid returns to talk about the latest political developments in his country. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock on WHYY 91 FM.
AT&T Productions, Philadelphia's all-comedy theater company, supports WHYY and presents The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe, starring Jennifer Childs in an array of roles, from jocks to supermoms to Trudy the Bag Lady. The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe is a classic comedy about staying in touch in a disconnected world. Through October 28th, tickets at 215-592-9560 or 1812productions.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Observers of the Justice Department say the agency is struggling as a result of the Gonzalez scandals, resignation of high-ranking officials, low morale, and questionable handling of a range of legal issues. We are talking with two law professors who served in the Justice Department about how the department can rebuild and restore its integrity and reputation. They are both at American University's Washington College of Law. Dan Marcus was General Counsel of the 9/11 Commission and Associate Attorney General in the last 2 years of the Clinton administration. Dan Metcalf was at the Justice Department some 30 years. He left earlier this year, a founding director of the Department's Office of Information and Privacy, and he's got a forthcoming book, Inside Justice, Secrecy at Work. And we've got calls coming into 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Jim from Wayne to join us. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning. You're on the air, Jim. Go ahead.
I was at the Justice Department about 30 years ago, and I remember thinking that every week or so that we were going to be embarrassed or disgraced by whoever the presidential appointee was at the time. And my particular career survived Ed Meese and a lot of people appointed under him and others, and we got over it. And my sense is that there's a lot of discussion about the morale, and there were always morale issues when I was there. But the thing of it is, I don't remember anyone actually interfering with the day-to-day work of the Justice Department, and I'm not really hearing that now. And I'd be very interested in your guest's response to that.
Yeah, me too, Jim. I just have a quick question for you. Are you saying, though, that this whole discussion and reaction and about Alberto Gonzalez and the Justice Department is overblown?
Well, what I'm thinking is that I haven't heard of anything that the Attorney General did that would cause a line prosecutor to be embarrassed.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sure my guests have a response to your call, Jim. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. Dan Metcalf, go ahead.
Well, I guess the best thing I can say in response to your caller is that you should look to see, first and foremost, how the congressional process worked this year and the questioning of Attorney General Gonzalez about his handling of the U.S. Attorney firings and also the connection to voting fraud investigations that were ongoing prior to the midterm election. There are a lot of AUSAs, if that's the position that the caller held, assistant United States attorneys, who were quite concerned about that, including a group in one judicial district who went so far as to step down from their supervisory positions. They literally said, okay, we're the chief and the deputy chief of these sections of the U.S. Attorney's Office. We're not quitting, but we're refusing to be supervisors any longer under these circumstances. There are many other instances like that. Unfortunately, where there's just tremendous embarrassment and frustration with what happened. That having been said, though, I will quickly add that I do agree with Dan about the other Dan about how resilient the department is and how it can bounce back. But it takes a good leader to push that or to foster that as quickly as possible.
Dan Marcus, you want to add to that?
Yes, yes, I do. I think the caller raises a good point, and I think that's why it's important to get to the bottom of the current investigation with respect to the firing of the U.S. attorneys. I don't think we've seen any real evidence of direct interference with a particular prosecution, but I think the question is whether any of the U.S. attorneys was fired because of his failure to bring a particular case, or his or her bringing a particular case. And I think that's why the other issue there is whether White House officials, and particularly political officials like Karl Rove, played a role in the process of deciding whether to retaliate, if you will, against a U.S. attorney whose performance was judged politically unacceptable by firing him. I think there is a fair amount of smoke, but we don't know yet whether there's fire there.
And
that's why it's important to get to the bottom of it.
I do disagree with that. At the risk of being borderline apocalyptic and insufficiently sanguine, I think one has to look only at, for example, the case of David Iglesias, the U.S. attorney in the District of New Mexico, who did receive a call from Senator Domenici, who did receive a call from Congressman Heather Wilson, and who was tarred with the brush of post hoc rationalization when he was after he was fired and then spoke up in response to public statements questioning his performance and those of his employees. I think if you look at that case alone, you have to conclude that there is at least evidence for going forward in a prima facie case that should be rebutted with further investigation.
And I do want to move on to some other issues, but are these the questions, and I guess I'll put this first to you, Dan Metcalf, that Alberto Gonzalez should have been able to answer?
Yes, I think right from the very beginning. Remember, this scandal, so to speak, blew up at the very beginning of 2007, shortly after I retired, when there were questions raised as to why this sudden cohort, all of a sudden, seven of them later learned to be eight or nine, were dismissed at the same time. And the explanation given by the department was so poor and so poorly handled that that became the problem, and it just snowballed after that. It's sort of the old Washington adage of the cover-up being worse than the crime. Here, if assuming there was a crime or a stretch of authority, it was not the cover-up, but it was the mishandling and the public explanation of it, almost as if the public really didn't have deserve a right to know. And if you look at how Gonzalez handled himself before the Senate, with a smirk and contempt sometimes, it's as if he was acting in such a way as to convey the idea that Senate really didn't have a reason to know. It was all very cavalier, and this was the all-powerful executive branch, and neither Congress nor the American public nor the world, for that matter, had any reason to make reasonable inquiry here.
Dan Marcus, let me put something else to you, and this has to do with questions about party loyalty and the hiring of staffers at the Justice Department, their qualifications being loyalty to the GOP or loyalty to the White House. Is this unusual when it comes to hiring lawyers for the Justice Department?
Yes. Now, I think you have to distinguish two things. One, the so-called political appointees of the department, including United States attorneys, the heads of the prosecution offices throughout the country for the United States, they are traditionally hired on a very political basis. And that's one of the tensions here and why it's so important to separate out the process of hiring, of appointing U.S. attorneys who are chosen by the president. And there's a tradition that the president picks outstanding lawyers, often recommended by the senators from the president's party, if there are any from that state, who have been active in party affairs. But it is also a long tradition that those individuals selected as United States attorneys, once they're appointed, operate on an entirely nonpartisan basis. And that's what is troublesome about this whole controversy, that the possibility that there was a political evaluation of the performance of those United States attorneys, and that some of them, the decisions to remove them, were influenced by partisan political considerations. But the other aspect of this situation that has been troubling to people has been an effort that started, I think, when John Ashcroft was Attorney General, and that continued with Alberto Gonzalez, and that was an injection of politics into the hiring of line attorneys, of entry-level attorneys into the Justice Department and U.S. attorneys' offices. And that, I think, is a change from past practice. I think the rationalization for it on the part of the Bush administration officials was that the Justice Department was full of lots of Ivy League Democrats, left-wing people, and that it was time to get more diversity, political diversity, into the Justice Department. But for the first time, we saw a political test being applied in the selection of line attorneys in the Justice Department, and that's a very dangerous thing. And that's one of the things I think the department has pulled back from that already somewhat, but that's one of the things that Judge McKasey can undo very quickly.
And to you, Dan Metcalf, because only because you were at the Justice Department for, what, some 30 years under a number of different attorneys general, was this unusual from your perspective, and you were at the Justice Department at the time?
Well, it certainly was, and Professor Marcus is entirely correct that it did start under Ashcroft, but I think it's fair to say that injection of political orientation or a political litmus test into hiring of career people was taken to an art form in the 2 years, 2005 and 2006, and the beginning of this year, until things blew up under Attorney General Gonzalez. I think it's very important on that point that this new Attorney General stand up and loudly and clearly say that the Department of Justice will no longer do anything like that. Hmm. You know, the other Dan and I are here at a law school, and we're now in the hiring season for third-year law students who are about to make decisions as to where to begin their legal careers. They're saddled with enormous debt, far more than he and I had 30, 40 years ago, and it's difficult to urge them to public service at an agency where they have to be concerned that this sort of standard might be applied. So one of the most important things that Attorney General designate once confirmed McKasey can do is stand up and say that the department no longer stands for that. It stands for the rule of law, the even-handed administration of justice, and for fair treatment and fair selection of career employees.
Let me get to Michael from Conshohocken to join us. Hi, Michael. Go ahead. Your Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. This actually follows really closely on what your guests were just talking about, and it was a story I first heard on Fresh Air. I've just dug up the record. It's the May 16th, 2007 episode. Mm-hmm. Investigation on just that process, the political vetting of career employees, and much scarier even than your guests just proposed. I'm hoping they know more about it. The small university founded by Pat Robertson called Regent University, up until recently apparently had just, you know, no reputation as a law school whatsoever, but started just pounding out law graduates that were just vacuumed up, apparently, into the Justice Department as career people when they had, you know, no background at all, aside from having graduated, you know, very disproportionate. I can't remember, they go through it in the story, you know, how many just huge numbers of people from this tiny law school had been sucked up into Bush's Justice Department and are now, of course, going to be the career people that are going to be guiding policy well after George Bush has left the presidency and, you know, into the indefinite future, and how that's going to affect, you know, the future way that the department is going to comport itself, especially after, as was mentioned on the program, so many of the senior people have left over,
you know,
the recent disasters.
Yeah, Michael, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me get a quick response, if I could, from you, Daniel Metcalf, because we've got another caller I want to squeeze in before we have to say goodbye. Do you share some of his concerns, Dan?
I'm going to surprise you, perhaps, and say that they might be a bit overblown, because I don't think it's been quite as drastic as described, but you have to remember that the person who was running rampant in the hiring process this year, and pardon me, in previous years, was a woman by the name of Monica Goodling, who was a Regent Law School graduate, who apparently had no adult supervision whatsoever, and was given enormous delegated power. So there was a strong connection to that school. I hope
she was a political appointee, right, Dan?
Yes, she was.
She wasn't hired for a career slot.
But she was the one who was involved in the hiring process.
Oh, I understand.
Right. Yes.
Well, you know what, let me, and I know we could go on with that, but I do want to get one more caller, and this is John from Canton, Ohio. John, go ahead, your Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is for your guest. I believe it was Mr. Metcalf made a statement that he was ashamed to go home and face his wife and children. After George Bush is his president and Alberto Gonzalez is his boss.
Right.
I wonder how he felt about the incidents after facing his family after the incident with Ruby Ridge.
With Janet Reno and Ruby Ridge?
With Janet Reno, yes.
Okay. John, let me get a response. I actually want to hear from both of our guests, but we'll start with Dan Metcalf. Go ahead, John.
That's a very fair question, caller, I think, and it's one that I think could reasonably be put to anybody in that situation.
Sure.
No matter how you feel about the decision that Attorney General Reno made in that case, she still was light years ahead as a person, as a leader, as a competent Attorney General of Gonzales. And that, to me, is an enormous difference. You know, people make mistakes or they make difficult decisions when they shoulder responsibility, and we might agree or disagree with those decisions on a day-to-day basis or one day at a time. But I'm talking about a difficulty that was systemic, something that existed every day of the week in the Department of Justice, and you could hardly turn around before realizing again how the department was, frankly, worse from that perspective than it was during the Ed Meese years, because at least during the Meese years, people like Brad Reynolds had the intellectual integrity to engage on legal issues. You may disagree from their ideological standpoint, but they would at least look at something on the merits.
Well, and let me just jump here, because I want to give Dan Marcus the final word. About 30 seconds, Dan Marcus.
I would only add to what Dan said, that the other contrast is one of competence. It's impossible to imagine Janet Reno not understanding why a particular United States attorney was removed from office.
Well put. Very well put.
And to you, Dan Marcus, I mean, both of you talk about the Justice Department as a resilient department, and should we be, should we leave on that final note thinking that things can be turned around?
Absolutely.
Even from the semi-apocalyptic corner of the room here,
optimism
is a very good note, but it's important that the new Attorney General act quickly to declare what the department stands for and what it no longer stands for.
Well, on that note, I thank you both very much. Dan Metcalf, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Pleased to be here.
And Dan Marcus, thank you as much as well. And thank you for joining us on Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times and find out more about the program, including podcasts, and you can leave us an email. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, and you're listening to WHYY-FM Philadelphia, your member-supported news and information station serving Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware.